When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
This is the true story of a New York City boy with big town hopes and small neighborhood dreams of becoming BFFs with the Real Housewives and other Bravo celebrities. Then, one day, that dream actually came true. Let me take you behind the velvet rope.
Hey everyone, this is David. Welcome back behind the velvet rope. Let's just get right into it today because we are joined by Mr. David Cook. How are ya?
I'm good. How are you?
I see that you have your coffee as well.
I do. Yes.
Where are you in the world? I don't even know. Are you on the same time zone as me in the East Coast?
So I'm in Nashville, Tennessee. So I am just on the Central time
zone. So it's earlier for you.
Negligibly. I've been up for a few hours. Our dogs don't understand the concept of sleeping in. So
I'm a morning person. I'm just like, I feel like nobody else I know is a morning person. And I
That's
like
to you.
You're not a morning person.
No, not at all.
But I go to bed really early and people think I'm crazy when I go to bed early. And I'm just like,
I try to adhere to like the in bed by 10:30 thing. But with this year, just being the dumpster fire that it is, that's kind of gone to hell. So it's just anytime really. It's been a weird one.
You're just like, why can't we do whatever we want now because the time is just different?
Yeah, there's no rules.
Now, so you're in Nashville. Where are you from originally?
I was born in Houston, Texas, but I call Kansas City Missouri home. That's where I was. I've only spent like a year and change in Houston, and then my family moved up to Kansas City, and I was there until after college.
Wow. And growing up, like, was it always music, like right from the beginning, or were you ever like, these are the 12 things I want to do with my life and let me figure it out?
No, I actually, music was, I grew up around it. My dad played guitar. And so there was always music in the house. It was kind of the peripherals for me. Like I was really, I was into sports growing up. So like I played, football, basketball, baseball. I kind of honed in on baseball as I got a little older and kind of saw myself maybe going the college baseball route. And then I tore up my shoulder. And I had done this band thing in high school for fun. Didn't really see it going anywhere. But when my shoulder blew out, I was like, all right, well, maybe I'll just kind of follow this band. You know, the rest of the guys were going to this this state university in Missouri. So I was like, I'll just go there and try the band thing out. And it just snowballed. So music wasn't really something I took seriously, I guess, until college.
And then you just kind of were like, this is it? Or was it still like, okay, I'm going to do this and, you know.
I gave myself ample opportunity to take other things seriously, I think. But it just, nothing got me excited. I mean, I took the band more seriously in college than I did school. So it's like.
That's a sign, right?
Yeah, right. I would go to class until like 2 or 3, particularly my last year, because the band that I had been with in Kansas City, we disbanded, and I joined a band that was based out of Tulsa, Oklahoma. So I would finish class at like 2 or 3, and then I would drive 4.5 hours to Tulsa,
wow,
play a gig, and then drive back overnight to make like my 8 a.m. class the next day. And I did that for like a year. And that's when I kind of figured like, okay, like I obviously like have a passion for this and let's see where it goes.
Yeah. Like 4.5 hours.
I got very familiar with truck stops on that route. So I knew my stops. I knew like, all right, this is where I'm going to get gas. And this is where like, you know, I'll get caffeine and, you know, shitty food. And, man, I look back on that now so fondly, probably because I'm getting to do what I do now, but, yeah, it was a trip. Like I would not recommend anybody do that, but for whatever reason, I was like, this is my route.
Interesting. Right. Cause like you weren't making like tons of money, I would assume at that point. So, I mean, that's when you're like, this is a passion.
Yeah. Oh God, for sure. Yeah. Cause I was literally like, I didn't tell my folks I was doing that. And so like, I would burn whatever cash I had on gas. And then pray to like, and I was just getting there, and then pray to God that the gig would make enough money where I had enough to get gas to go home.
Wow.
So that was, yeah, it was weird. Like looking back on it now, there were so many like stupid little gambles that paid off, that like had one of those things gone wrong, you know, I'm probably like really looking down the barrel. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
So, but all these serendipitous little things that all converge at the exact right moment to make sure like, okay, like this is the path that I'm supposed to be on right now.
When you told your parents you wanted to do music full time, were they like, great? Or, I mean, I'm just thinking of my own parents. That's a whole nother story. They would be like, there's the door. And yeah. Like, I mean, I'm like, you know, they would not have understood that. But, you know, there's a lot of parents out there that are like, that's great. And, you know.
Of course, yeah. No, my mom was super supportive, but I think pragmatic. So she had fears and made those fears known. Like, you know, I had job offers out of college. Like, I studied graphic design in college. And so, like, there were job offers there. I had a really good conversation with my dad, actually. And my dad was like, you know, you've got your whole life to make money. So give it a few years and see what happens. Cause like the other option was for me to move to Tulsa, Oklahoma and live in my friend's dining room so that, you know, I could play music and be in this band full time. And, yeah, so I gave myself a deadline. So I moved down there at 23. And that was like the agreement with the parents was, you know, time frame it. And if you're not where you need to be in this amount of time, then come home. And so I gave myself 3 years. And then, you know, fast forward to Idol, I ended up winning almost 6 months to the day before my deadline.
Oh, really? So that was within like the 3 years.
Yeah, barely.
So prior to Idol, like you were, you know, working as a musician, like making some money and like at least following
like acoustic gigs for rent money. Yeah.
Yes. Yeah. So then, okay. So 2008 season 7, you know, what was different? Like what made you decide to, why then, I guess.
It's another one of those things where sometimes I always wondered if I was driving on the path or if the path was driving me. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
I went to Omaha with my little brother and my mom. My little brother had wanted to audition for years. And I was peripherally aware of Idol, you know, so to the point where I was just like, all right, there's probably no avenue for somebody like me there. You know, like I kind of lived in the rock lane. And to that point, there hadn't really been, I think Daughtry might have been the lone example at that point, maybe Bo Bice to a lesser extent, but there really wasn't a wide open avenue for me there, it didn't seem like. So I went to Omaha just like, it was a free vacation for me to get out of Tulsa for a few days and see my family. And so I went not intending to audition and then kind of got talked into it as we were standing in the registration line. And then it just, you know, again, it was another one of those things that just snowballed. So I picked a song that I normally would play like at acoustic gigs, because that was the one that was like readily available to me mentally. Made it through the first round of auditions. I auditioned in a group with my brother, and my brother didn't make it. So that was a little weird navigating. And then it just, yeah, just audition after audition, I kept somehow like falling forward. But it was really just this weird mental game of catch up. Like I wasn't like, I didn't have this grandiose plan. Like I'm going to audition and I'm going to do this and that. Da, da, da. It was just like, all right, I made another one. So what now? You know what I mean?
Yeah.
But it,
who convinced you to audition when you were standing in line? Your brother?
Sort of. So we were standing in line, and
10 days, Kingdom of the Planet of the Apes is coming to IMAX and theaters everywhere.
What a wonderful day!
This summer, one movie event will reign.
It is our time.
They stole my village.
I know where they're taking your clan.
Bend for your king.
Never.
Kingdom of the Planet of the Apes, only in theaters May 10th. Tickets on sale now. Rated PG-13. Some material may be inappropriate for children under 13.
Idol would have these producers walking down the line with like handheld cameras, basically just snagging like on the spot interviews.
Yeah.
For B-roll. And one of the producers stopped and asked my brother, like, why are you the next American Idol? And my brother gave, you know, whatever answer he gave, I don't remember. And then he turned to me and asked me, and I was just like, I'm not auditioning. Like, I'm just here for him. And he goes, oh, well, you know, maybe you should audition. He goes, just answer the question. If you decide to audition, great. If you don't, then obviously we won't use it. I was like, all right. So I gave some smart ass answer about, I'm just here to meet Mandy Moore, which didn't make any sense, but whatever. And he walked away, and my mom and my brother were like, you should probably just go ahead and audition. Okay. I guess. Yeah, sure. Whatever. And literally like 2 minutes later, I was signing on the registration sheet. So,
wow.
Yeah, it was very, yeah, it was one of those things where just all these little weird things converge at the right moment.
And then, so you audition, and there you walk in, and what? There you just see, like, Randy and Paula. Like, I mean, you didn't watch Idol, it sounds like.
No. I mean, again, I was peripherally aware. So, like, I knew, you know, the big talking heads. You know, I knew Ryan and the judges, and that's really it.
Okay.
It was at this arena in Omaha. And so you walk in and it's literally like they've got stations set up on the floor of the arena. And then you all just kind of sit down in the bleachers and wait for them to call your section. So it was very cattle callish. It was very like not a lot of like human connection in it. Do you know what
right
I mean?
Like we're making a TV show and
yeah we got to get through this, let's wrap this up,
like, you know, it could either be you or someone else. I mean,
really? Yeah,
they'll
yeah
find they'll find their people, you know.
They said that, you know, I remember the number at the end of the season. They said 103,000 people auditioned that season, you know, about throughout all the city. So like you can imagine, I mean, there was probably every bit of 10,000 people there.
Yeah.
And so, yeah, they herd you into groups of four, and then you go in front of one of these little kiosks on the floor of the arena, and they point at you. You sing for 10, 15 seconds, and then step back into your group of four. And then I remember, like, the judge kind of sat there and looked at us like this, and then went, okay, you go this way. Pointed at me and go, you go this way. The other three of you, sorry, you're not what we're looking for. Thank you so much for trying. Head out this way. And you go into this room and, you know, sign your non-disclosure agreements and
right.
Then next thing I know, I'm outside the arena. Just like, all right, what now? Like I didn't know where my family was at. I was just like standing outside this arena by myself for about a half hour afterwards. Did that just happen?
And then they found you. I mean, that's just how I'm picturing it. I'm picturing it like you go to the left, you go to the right.
Really? No, truly.
That's what I'm picturing.
I the analogy that always kind of sticks out in my head is, you remember that scene in Willy Wonka where like they go into the room with the geese laying golden eggs, and you see this way, and it's like, oh, that's a good egg, so it goes this way, and then another one just drops down the chute. That's kind of what it was like. It was very much like, all right, you guys go this way, you're good to go. But yeah, very impersonal. And it really, I mean, I didn't see the judges until, I think, my fifth audition. So, like, right. they put you through it, for sure.
And then, so, like, going through this, like, the timeline between that and the judges is what? Like, a week, months?
So, the initial audition, the cattle call style audition, that was in August of 2007. And then I went back to Omaha 2 months later and did two or three more auditions over the course of a couple days. And then once I made it past that, then made it to Hollywood Week. And that was, no, wait, I'm sorry. I'm missing one. Then I had to go back to Omaha again a month later for another round. And then went to Hollywood Week in January of 08.
Wow.
So it was all pretty spread out. And the weird thing was, like, I had to keep it super quiet.
Right. So,
like, I went back to Tulsa and everybody's like, how did it go? And I'm like, eh. You know, like, I can't tell anybody.
Right.
In the meantime, like, it was so weird. Like, right before Hollywood Week in January, I got a job offer to be the graphic design editor for this arts and entertainment magazine in Tulsa. And it was a job I'd been, like, working towards for a couple months. And I had to tell them, like, hey, so I want the job, but this – I got to take a week off because this thing is happening and I have to see it through. And they were like, well, you know, obviously we can't give you the job if you're not going to be here. So we have to know, you have to say yay or nay now. So I had to turn down that job.
Wow.
On the hopes that the Idol, you know, the Hollywood Week was going to work out.
So that's like a coming to Jesus moment of like.
Oh, it was very much like, are you in or are you out?
Yeah.
Like, shit or get off the pot. So
yeah.
Oh man. Yeah. I remember that being like the most nerve wracking part of the whole thing. It was just like, if I turn this down and the Idol thing doesn't work out, then I'm back at square one effectively.
Right. Yeah. So, I mean, at some point, like you said, you didn't want to audition or you weren't going to, at some point, well, I mean, you're turning down a job. You must've gone from like, what am I doing here? Let me just pick some random song.
Yeah.
I mean, a song that you knew to like, I want this.
I just felt like it was an avenue, and I had gotten that far making some pretty, like, on paper dumb decisions, you know, like moving to Oklahoma to live in a dining room, missing a van call and hitchhiking up to a gig in Wisconsin, like just dumb decisions that don't make any sense that worked out. So I was like, well, what's one more dumb decision? It's funny now. I feel like my entire career is just built on dumb decisions.
Yeah, but I mean,
they just work out. Do you know what I mean? Like just taking gambles and betting on myself, and feeling like, yeah, I've got some semblance of talent. I'm not the worst musician in the world, and maybe I can trick a few people and make a few bucks out of this. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
And it just kept snowballing. Yeah.
Did you have any reservations in doing it? Like, was there any, you know, like certain people back in the day, like there was that stigma of like, if you were a certain type of musician, I mean, I'm not saying there should be, but you know, like certain people, like you look at like a Constantine or like, you know, just, you know, in the beginning, like you said, it was Daughtry and maybe like Bo Bice. Like, did you have any of like, I mean, not that I'm saying you were like selling out arenas at that time, but did you have any like, this is the type of music I want to do and maybe this is like, you know, bubblegum TV stuff?
I felt like, honestly, once I made the decision to really see it through and like, all right, I'm going to do this and see how it shakes out, I had no expectation of anything. So I was just like, all right, like, maybe it'll be cool to get a few minutes of TV time. Somebody here in Kansas City or in Oklahoma might hear my voice and maybe I get a gig out of it. Whatever, you know. And then even as I got on the top 24, I was like, all right, well, I'm going to go home in a couple of weeks. So like, I'll just, it's, you know, free trip to LA and maybe get my face seen. So whatever. It was pretty late in the process when I honestly was just like, oh, like I've got to, I have a shot here. How the hell is that happening? But whatever. And I think that mentality actually served me pretty well because it allowed me to kind of focus on the moment and like the micro instead of the macro.
Yeah.
So yeah. I was like, oh my God, I'm on this TV show being watched by millions of people. I'm going to throw up. It was, all right, I'm here another week.
Yeah.
You know, enjoy the moment as best you can. But yeah, I think the decision to like go for it wasn't really in connection with any sort of expectation. It was just like, I'm just going to go for this and see what happens.
And then, well, yeah, I mean, I was going to say like week to week, that probably helped you. Were you like the one that stuck out, or like you were with all these other contestants? Were they, I mean, I imagine, you know, because people come into this like, this is life or death. Like this sure, is either going to make, which I'm not saying is the case, but you know, you look at all the people that don't win that go on to like amazing careers.
I think I just felt like, well, like one of the things that really helped me was that they allowed musical instruments on our season for the first time. And that was a huge saving grace for me because I, you know, I'll go to my grave saying I wasn't the best singer on our season. I think I have a character about my voice, which is helpful, but you know, I mean, our season had David Archuleta and Carly Smithson and Brooke White and Saisha Mercado and all these just incredible singers. And so the one thing I was able to lean on was like my musicianship. That's where I felt like, all right, this is the strength I can bring to the table. Because I'd been in bands for 10 years before that and cut my teeth, you know, playing in clubs. And so I felt like I had that going for me. And so I really leaned on that. And that's kind of where the idea from like, for like reworking songs came from. Because it was just like, you know, you brought it up earlier. Like I did have an idea what kind of music I wanted to do. And I knew that like when it came to theme weeks like Mariah Carey week, what am I going to do? You know, there's no Mariah Carey song that on its face sits in my wheelhouse. So like I kind of had to bend these songs to my will a little bit out of necessity. And then that ended up kind of being, you know, a strength for me and something that helped me stand out. Neither one of those decisions were premeditated. It was just like, okay, this is the situation that I'm in. Let's see what happens. Which, you know, I don't know if I make those decisions if I'm thinking like what I was saying a minute ago, like on a macro sense and worrying about everything. I don't think I make those decisions probably out of fear. Just like, you know, I don't want to mess this up, so I'm going to play it safe. Like not even thinking about that allowed me to take these weird sort of calculated risks.
Well, I never even thought of it either. Maybe, you know, about the fact that they allowed instruments on your season, you know, like I never thought of that.
Lifesaver for me, you know, I remember because the first few auditions I didn't have, they wouldn't, you know, I couldn't play guitar like in the early auditions. And I remember one audition in front of some associate producers. They go, I finished the song and they're like, that's great. You know? And then one guy goes, do you play guitar? I was like, yeah. And he goes, I could tell cause you were doing the chord progressions with your hand while you were singing. I was like, oh, he goes, don't do that the next round. So the next round I go and I purposely like, I grab the seams on the outside of my pants, you know, and I sing and one of the judges goes, you need to use your hands more. And then the next round was in front of Randy, Paul, and Simon. And mentally, I'm just a wreck. So I'm like, what do I do with my hands? You know, it's very much like a Ricky Bobby thing. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
So once they said guitars were allowed, I was like, oh my God, thank God. Because now I don't have to worry about what to do with my hands.
Do you think, like, I mean, it's neither here nor there. Like, do you think you would have maybe had a different outcome if the whole instruments and guitars weren't allowed?
Without question. Yeah.
Really?
I think it.
Before we continue this conversation, I just want to say that 2020 has certainly been a year. And at the beginning of quarantine, there was a lot getting in the way of my happiness and achieving my goals. And I turned to BetterHelp, which is online professional counseling. And it really helped me not only achieve happiness during this time, but really achieve my goals. Behind the Velvet Rope went from 2 times a week to 4 times a week. And I wrote a book, the Behind the Velvet Rope book. So for anyone that feels that things are getting in the way of their happiness and achieving their goals, I strongly recommend BetterHelp. You don't even have to leave your house. It is online professional counseling. And what I love about it is you can start communicating with them within 24 hours of signing up. Anyone that knows me knows that if you don't get back to me, that is a huge pet peeve of mine. These counselors get back to you in a very timely manner, and you're really matched with a counselor that fits your needs. If you get a counselor that you don't like, you can just request another counselor. Everything, of course, is confidential. They deal with a variety of issues: depression, stress, anxiety, sleep. We're all having trouble sleeping during this. Trauma, anger, family conflicts, self-esteem, grief, LGBTQIA issues. And I have to say, it is actually more affordable than traditional online counseling, and financial aid is available for anyone that cannot afford it. So they're growing so rapidly, and so many people are turning to BetterHelp for help that they're looking for additional counselors in all 50 states. Go to betterhelp.com. That's BetterHelp, HELP.com/velvetrope. BetterHelp.com/velvetrope, and you get 10% off your first month. Join over 1 million people today taking charge of their mental health. You're not alone. If you need help, this is a great solution. BetterHelp.com/velvetrope and get 10% off your first month.
I think at that point, the guitar was a bit of a crutch for me. And so being able to have it, you know, it was a little bit of a warm blanket. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
And it allowed me to, as Top 24 started, I think that first week I didn't play guitar and I felt super uncomfortable. So the second week, I think, was 70s week. And I did All Right Now by Free, and I played guitar and I felt better about it. And so I was just like, all right, I'm going to lean into that a little bit and just kind of get my footing. Cause I was by no means even remotely a finished product those first few weeks. And so it was nice to like live under the radar, have that security blanket, and kind of find myself in that atmosphere. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah. And you thought you have a chance, what, like not the top 24, like when you were standing there in the final two, like when you just towards the end, you were like, okay, I may win.
I think probably top three or top four was when I started to think like, maybe I have a chance here. Like percentage wise, it's not great, but there's a percentage chance there. Right. But even then it was never like, you know, I never felt like I was even the finale. I was just like, took second on Idol. Cool. You know, because Archie was such a powerhouse. I still am not 100% sure what happened. But it just, I don't know. I had such a high level of respect for all the other performers because I knew the work I was putting in. I saw at least some of the work they were putting in. There were no slouches our season. So it was just like,
yeah,
you know, any one of us could have pulled that out. I really, truly believe that.
Right. I mean, you guys, like you said, Archie had some moments that were
incredible. I talk to him about once a month now. And I still compliment him on some of his performances on the show because they were nuts. Like, it was just like, oh God, like there's no way I'm beating that.
Do you think it helped you, you know, just because you were one of the older, you know, not old, but, you know, like you had people, like you weren't on the, like you weren't 18. Like, do you think that like just mentally helped you?
I think having had, you know, that 10 years before Idol, I think was helpful because I had this base level of musicianship to lean on. I knew where my voice set on like the spectrum.
Yeah.
And I knew where it sat sonically. So it was easier for me to make decisions. All right, I'm going to do this song because it sits in my vocal range. I feel like I can tell that story and I can do that performance justice. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
So I knew what pitfalls to stay away from vocally, which was helpful.
What about the judges? Who was your favorite?
In the moment, I liked Simon only because I saw him as the biggest challenge. Do you know, like, I felt like if he said something good about you, he meant it. And if he said something bad about you, he meant it. Not that I felt like the other judges were lying, but
right.
The other judges had an empathy chip that maybe Simon didn't have. So, but after, particularly when we did the Fox finale a few years ago, and I forget what magazine did this like retrospective on Idol. And I found out that Paula actually fought for me. Like the other judges, I wasn't going to be on the show except for Paula. And she like shut down production fighting for me. So the last few years, especially, Paula has been my favorite purely because of that. Like I owe her quite a bit.
Right. Like she just was like, she wouldn't let it go. She was like,
apparently, yeah, apparently her and Simon, they went 12 rounds over it. So I'm not sure what happened that caused Simon to lose, but I'm glad he did.
Paula always gets her way. I mean, come on now.
You're not joking.
Were they like any fun stories of like, I mean, like, did you interact with the judges or it really was just like, you know, like an iron wall because they were judges and there wasn't.
They kept us pretty separate. The only time I remember really interacting with them off camera was the night Michael Johns got voted out. There was a Fox party to celebrate Idol Gives Back. Cause that was the theme that week.
Yeah.
And, so we go to this party at Rupert Murdoch's place and, you know, all of us are kind of like trying to look like we belong at this party. And, the judges show up and I go up to Simon and I just say, you know, I guess you're stuck with me another week. Just, you know, being a smart ass. And he goes, David, I don't know why you're still here. Oh, okay. You know, 25-year-old me took that as a challenge. I think 37-year-old me would have probably just shriveled up. But that was like my one interaction with the judges before the finale. Past that, they kept it, you know, it was before like the huge social media blow up.
Right.
So yeah, we were kept pretty sequestered from everything. I remember you were conscious of the bubble that we were in. I didn't really know much outside of that bubble and they kept us pretty separate from really everybody. We would see Ryan for stage block and for live show. And that was about it. So yeah, I didn't see much of anybody.
Do you keep in touch or like ever run into, you know, like when the world was open, like do you ever run into like a Ryan, Simon, Paula?
Being here, no, not really. I'm trying to think of the last time I saw them. God, it's been a long time. In fact, I think it might have been the Fox finale was the last time I saw them.
Wow.
Most of the people I still talk to a few of our the fellow contestants from our season, Archie and Ramiel and Brooke, and. You know, I've kept a lot of the relationships from people behind the scenes, a lot of the like associate producers and, you know, contestant wranglers, that kind of stuff.
And I'm not so sure how good Simon is in keeping in touch anyway with people.
he's you know, he's a busy guy, and I don't know what we would talk about anyway. God bless him.
What about guest judge J-Lo?
So J-Lo wasn't on our season.
She wasn't? I thought she was on your season.
Our guest judges that season were Dolly Parton, who I absolutely adored, Neil Diamond, Andrew Lloyd Webber, and Mariah Carey. Yeah, those were the four.
What was Mariah like? Maybe I'm thinking of Mariah. I swear I thought J-Lo was, I mean, you know, not that I'm saying Mariah and J-Lo are the same person.
I've interacted with J-Lo very briefly at a couple Idol things over the years, but yeah, not on our season. Mariah was, Mariah. I remember not having a whole lot of interaction with her. She came in, we did our like midweek, we're going to film, you know, us playing our songs for her for the first time and her kind of giving her notes and then us taking those notes and working it out. And, but yeah, she wasn't super involved that I recall. Dolly Parton was super down to earth. And I learned a lot from her just about opening up the peripherals and being kind of in tune with how anything can be an inspiration. She talked about writing 9 to 5 and how she came up with the beginning of that song. Was her running her fake fingernails together.
Really?
And I just remember thinking like, how random that would inspire a song. But ultimately I just thought that was so cool.
I mean, a classic song that.
Oh my God. Yeah. And to think like it came together because of your Lee press on nails. That's pretty rad.
Yeah. I didn't know that.
I didn't either until she told us.
And Dolly, I mean, I picture Dolly very down to earth.
Yeah. I really like our mentors that season were pretty rad. I have to say, I think just being open and really taking that role seriously. And it was something I tried to pay forward when I went to mentors. It's like, I just want to be open and of assistance to these contestants, pass on any pertinent knowledge I can and help them do well. And that seemed to be what all our mentors did that season. It was pretty cool.
Did you watch Idol like after you were off like all those years and like the new incarnation with like Lionel Richie and Katy Perry?
I haven't caught a lot of the last couple seasons. I started to find out as I was watching the seasons after mine anytime I would really get into a contestant, they would go home. I was like, I just don't want to pick a favorite anymore. But I haven't tuned in a whole lot the last couple of seasons. But I did watch a lot like after my season just to really keep up and wanting to continue to be a part of that.
And see who won.
You know.
What about, so you won. So when you won, what was that like?
It's like being shot out of a cannon. I remember just being floored by like all of a sudden you won, you're out of the bubble. Good luck. You know, I think 24 hours after I won, I was on the Tonight Show with Jay Leno. And what sucks about it is I don't remember a minute of it. I was so tired. I hadn't slept a wink. But yeah, there's apparently footage that I was on the couch. So I just remember like it was that. It was just a lot, like right out of the gate, like go, 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 go. First 72 hours, you're doing all this press. You're taking a meeting with your management, scheduling writing sessions. You know, we got to get you moved. We got to find a place for you to live. It was all very chaotic. But it was all exciting stuff. And you know, immediately you're jumping into like tour rehearsals for the Idol tour and trying to write a record. But it was nuts. The second half of 2008, Jesus, it's a blur. My memories are of like just moments. Like I remember the first tour stop show in Phoenix. I don't remember performing, but I remember like standing outside of the venue, like getting on the bus, like just weird, like little moments, you know what
right.
I mean?
I was going to say like, so was it like they wanted to move you what, like out to LA? Like, was it like, okay, the cash cow of Idol, like let's, you know.
It was, hey, congrats on all the work you've done for the last 4.5 months. Let's get to work. It was really that. I mean, within 72 hours, I'm in a meeting with management and they're like, what do you want? What do you want out of this? And I just remember saying like, if I can get 10 good years, I'm calling that a win. You know, anything after that is cake. And they're playing me like songs that they think might be a good first single for the album that hasn't been written yet. You know what I mean? Who do you want to write with? I'm like, what? Like, what are we talking about? Like, didn't this just happen? It was all very quick. But, you know, all I could do at that point was just kind of grab hold and hang on.
And, like, so were you in a way, like, you know, because, look, you had, like, Carrie and Kelly. Mm-hmm. So were you, you know, even though it's a lot of work, I mean, it sounds like part of you was like, who am I? Like, you're asking me who I want to write with? Like, yeah, wow. Okay. Thanks for asking.
Who do you want me to write with?
Right. But at the same time, are you like, oh my God, like I could be Kelly Clarkson and Carrie. Like, you know, did you have like, there's no shade. Like, were you just like, I could be a freaking superstar? Or were you just like, let me stick to the music? I mean, I would be like, where's my check? And I'm going to have a house and a car. And like, I'm going to be Carrie Underwood, people. And that's just my thing.
I acknowledge that possibility existed. Maybe for the first time. I was just like, okay, like this is ridiculous and absurd. And this could be my life for a while. I remember thinking like, all right, you know, I had to pay some back rent that was due. And get current on some bills. That was the first thing. And then it was like, okay, what do I want this to be for me right now? It's like, so I got a house and I got a dog and I got a car. Like, those are three things you need, right?
Yeah.
You know, a way to get somewhere, a place to live, and a buddy. I think once I had those three things, it was like, okay, whatever. You know, I'm good for a while. Before I knew it, the record was out. Like, it was just like, okay, record's out. Now what? Now we got to do promo for the record. I remember our first performance as a band was SNL. And that's one of the few times I've hugged a trash can and thrown up right before we went on stage.
Really?
This is so ridiculously stupid. What am I doing here? Like, Ben Affleck was hosting. And we were performing as a band for the first time anywhere. Ugh, absurdity. That whole year was just absurd. Doesn't make any sense.
And that was literally your first live performance was SNL.
Yeah. What?
Right. So like, this is that when like the pinch me moment like kicks in, like when it's Ben Affleck and you're on SNL. I mean, that's got to be a career goal at that point high.
It wasn't a goal because it just felt so absurd to even like put out into the universe. Like my goal was like, get signed. All right, now what? Do you know what I mean? Like it just, everything was happening so fast. I think I didn't have the opportunity to process it and like make new goals. So I was just kind of on for the ride. I was like, I want to have a record deal and go on tour. Okay, what else? Hell, I don't know what else. What, isn't that enough? You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So stuff like SNL and I got to play at Carnegie Hall. Just stupid shit. They're like, to this day is like huge feather in the cap, huge pinch me moments that don't make any sense to me even now.
How is Ben Affleck? Or it just, he kind of did his own thing. You kind of did your own thing. You don't really enjoy
yeah,
it.
Yeah, no, he did his own thing. He was nice. I tell this story all the time of the first time I met him was we were shooting like, you know, they do those little like promos where, hey, I'm Ben Affleck and I'm hosting SNL this week with musical guest David Cook.
Yeah.
I always tell people like my first interaction with Ben Affleck is while he's saying that he stepped on my foot really hard. And that was it. We said hi, he stepped on my foot, and I didn't really see him again. So,
what about you performed, Hillary Clinton was a fan, and you performed for Hillary Clinton?
Yeah, that was the Carnegie Hall thing. So I got asked by, I guess she's friends with Mary Steenburgen, Ted Danson's wife.
Yeah.
Apparently, Hillary Clinton was a big fan. And asked, Mary asked if I would be a surprise performer for her at this Glamour Women of the Year Awards thing at Carnegie Hall. I was like, yeah, sure. And so I go up and play this song and end up at this after party in a semicircle, like fly on the wall during a conversation between Hillary Clinton, Condoleezza Rice, and Fergie. Even talking about it now, it just doesn't make any sense to me. It's very strange, but that was life at that point.
Right. Like, do you have out of body moments now, like where you look back and you're like, was that me? Like, was I actually the one having that conversation?
Constantly. Like, I feel like when I tell people this stuff, it's like.
Like, whose life is this?
Whose life is it? And B, like, I feel like somebody's going to be well within their rights to call bullshit. You know what I mean? She's like, that didn't happen. And I'm not going to have any way of saying, no, it really did. It's just like, yeah, you're probably right.
Right.
But that was that year. That was 08. Very strange.
Are you the type, like, to get starstruck, you know? Like, is there anyone, like, if you met them, you would be like, I can't believe, you know? Or, I mean, well, you met Hillary Clinton, you know? Like, you've
that
met...
Was, yeah. That was... I don't know that I felt... In awe, like I couldn't speak. I think it just felt very, very foreign, maybe. Just like, this is not, I acknowledge that it wasn't normal life. I acknowledge that like 98% of my life at that point was very much theater of the absurd. Historically and even now, like I don't really geek out too much unless it's like a professional athlete. Like somebody who's doing something that like, is completely out of my wheelhouse. Like, do not understand it.
Right.
Like, I got to meet Patrick Mahomes at a charity event, quarterback for the Chiefs. Was it last year? Yeah, last year. And just like, I got stupid. You know what I mean? That kind of stuff still.
We all have those people. Like, I would think, well, some people don't, but I'm kind of the same way. Like, there's one or two people.
Yeah. Or like, you know, like music royalty. Like I met Bruce Springsteen. Just like, that didn't make any sense to me. I was like, I don't have anything to say to you except like I'm a huge fan and, you know, you're great.
Yeah.
Like there's no chance of having any sort of a philosophical conversation in that moment.
Because you're like, I'm just going to lose it.
Yeah, yeah. Like nothing I say is going to be intelligible. And you're just going to think I'm ridiculous and you're going to want to get away from me as quickly as possible. It's pretty much that kind of scenario.
What about, cause you know, when you were on Idol, one of the things that, I mean, you got lots of votes, but you had the whole mom vote thing going on.
Yeah.
I mean, I think you were kind of the first one, I think, to really have that whole thing become a thing. One of the first.
It was funny because, you know, even now, like, I knew that Archie kind of had the tween vote kind of on lockdown for the most part. And at that time, that seemed like the lion's share of the viewers for the show. So that was part of, like, what led me to believe, like, all right, I'm taking second for sure. The silent majority spoke up, I guess. It's funny even now, though, because, like, I'll get, you know, the random brave, like, tweet from an Archie fan. even about this last election. This election reminds me this election's giving me anxiety because I remember what happened with the Battle of the Davids on Idol. It just makes me laugh so much. I'm just like, because teens are now like, you know, early 20s and voting.
Did you get, I mean, because it was a different time with social media, but to that point, like, did you get like hate, you know, from like the Archie fans? Like, this is outrage.
I was fortunate to have Michael Johns as part of that experience for me. Mike was great about, I remember early on, you know, I would see some of that stuff and it would get a little toxic and start screwing with your head. And I just remember Mike kind of tuning me off of that stuff. And that happened pretty early. So I was fortunate. I didn't see 99% of it, but.
That's good. And like, even now you're like, you've never gone down that rabbit hole that we all live in.
Oh no, I've gone down that rabbit hole a few times over the years. I'm able to, for the most part, process it as it is, and find humor in it. But yeah, there was a moment there, you know, that's what therapy's for.
Seriously. I mean, yeah. We all listen, if you do anything even remotely in the public eye these days.
Oh, for sure. Listen, I've leaned a lot over the last 12 years on this quote that I'd had actually before Idol. And it was, whether you're pleasing or pissing everybody off, you're doing it wrong. And so, yeah, I just felt like, all right, like, there's going to be people out there that don't like me, and I just got to figure out a way to be okay with that.
Yeah.
Easier said than done, but.
It's easier said than done. It's easier said than done.
Yeah.
What about like music competition shows? You know, like, do they work? You know what I mean? Like, or is there any like negative? Like, have you ever had that, you know, like when I interview actors, like a lot of times I'll interview an actor who was on a soap opera and now there's something else, but they'll say, this is what happened after I was on this soap opera. No offense to soap operas. Like, is there any of that, like, did you ever get any of that, like, negative connotation of, like, oh, that's the kid from Idol or the guy from Idol and he's not a real musician or whatever?
Yeah, which, I mean, there's always going to be that. I think because it is viewed as a shortcut, which I would argue that it's not. Particularly, you know, I can speak for myself and say, like, I know I put in the work beforehand. So Idol was just a platform, really, for me. And it got me some exposure, which I needed. But I didn't come in just off the street like, oh, I guess I'll sing. You know what I mean?
Right.
So people that say that, you know, more often than not are just misinformed. And I don't really, you know, I don't put much weight on it. But sadly, yeah, that does exist. Which, I mean, ultimately, you can look at it one of two ways. You can either take it personally or you can just look at it like it's their loss. I'm proud of the stuff that I put out now. And, you know, if they want to deny themselves the opportunity to listen to it, then okay.
Right, totally.
Yeah.
What about, like, is it like a saturated formula? You know, because, like, look, you have Carrie and Kelly that sure. are just not... just from numbers point of view, like they're the two biggest, so to speak.
Oh no, for sure. Yeah. Yeah.
So like, I mean, but I'm also like at just a different point. Like I don't watch The Voice just because I'm just don't, but you know, so like I couldn't, but maybe it's as, but like, you know, you don't hear of like, even like a Constantine, a David Cook, like you just don't hear, like there's these shows, but you don't really hear of what people go on to do. Like, is it saturated? Like in your opinion of like just these shows have been around for too long?
I don't know if it's saturated. I think, here's my opinion.
Yeah.
Whatever it's worth. I think when Idol was at its best, it was about the contestants. And the lion's share of the show on any given week was set up to allow the viewers to invest in the contestants. I think when it started to shift was when the other shows came along and it became more about the judges panel. and less about the contestants. Because then it's like, you know, how fortunate was I that you come off the show and you've got this audience that's really invested in not just you as an art, as a musician or a singer, but in you as a human being, and they want you to succeed. And so they're going to invest in what you put out. And then I think as that shifted, the viewers were allowed less of an opportunity to invest in the contestants. And so when the contestants came off the show, it was just kind of like, okay, what's next, you know? Which is unfortunate. But I have noticed, particularly with Idol, the last couple of seasons, I think as the judges panel has kind of solidified, there's been less turnover. I've noticed more of an effort to get back into the contestants a little bit, which is nice. So hopefully that continues.
I hope so too. Yeah. What about Kinky Boots? Talk to me about Kinky Boots.
That was a career highlight for me, truly.
Really?
I had done theater in high school, and I went to college on a theater scholarship before I dropped it to focus on the band. And so the opportunity to get back into it and kind of exercise the creative muscles in a different way was huge. The cast and the crew were so welcoming. I made some incredible friends in that production. And really just, I think at that moment, it felt like that story was so pertinent and so needed to be told. And so to get the honor of getting to help tell that story for, you know, I think I did 99 or 100 shows, to get to tell that story that many times, what a privilege. Yeah, I can't say enough good things about that. I'm so thankful I got to do that.
It was a great show.
I couldn't agree more. And just from top to bottom, some of the most talented, nicest people, both in front of, or both on stage and off. So much fun to be a part of. I was bummed when it closed because I was just like, I'll go back as many times as they want me to go back. It was so much fun.
It was, the music is great. It's everything.
I think it's one of those shows that everything converged the right way. The music was there. The story was there. The character depth was there. They did a fantastic job putting that show together. Yeah.
Did you ever meet Cyndi Lauper?
I did. I was warned about her before I met her. Not that she was a bad person, nothing about that, but just like she was very opinionated about the music and how people sang it. And so I remember I start my run on the show, get a few shows under my belt, and there's this scene where I'm up in the office, but I'm like upstage and our mics are turned off, and it's me and Kirsten Maldonado from Pentatonix was playing Lauren at that time. So we're talking up there and she's like, "Have you met Cyndi yet?" I'm like, no, I haven't. She goes, "Oh, I met her before the show. She's great. She's here tonight." I'm like, oh no. You know, so the whole second act, I'm a wreck. Just like, sing it right, hit all the notes, don't mess up. So I met Cyndi afterwards and she was super complimentary. And she was like, "I'm so glad you're here," which made my whole day. So that's a
good stamp of approval.
I'll take it. I'll take that all day.
You know, she's working. I forgot what it was. She's working on some other show now with Harvey.
I think so.
I think Working Girl, but I could be wrong. I think
that's good.
I'm pretty sure that that's what it is. What about, so let's talk about your new music.
Yes.
Strange World. Tell me all about it.
So like everybody, I have been relegated to being indoors at home for the most part. And the song kind of stems from, we have this like oval shaped window in our gym. And I was looking outside one day and just kind of realizing I don't, it's been so long since I've been out in the world. Like, I don't exactly recognize it. And that's kind of where the song started from, is, you know. And then the idea, like, trying to embrace the positives of this. Like, I'm a road warrior. You know, I like being on the road. And this year, not being able to do it, I've been able to spend more time at home with my wife and my dogs and be more present. And I've enjoyed that. And it's actually allowed me the opportunity to really double down on the creative process and focus on that more. And so it's just, that's the Strange World is just about trying to embrace the good things about where we find ourselves right now, instead of panicking that the world outside the wall is on fire.
And I imagine people are relating to it for that very reason, that it is a strange world.
I hope so. I hope people are able to find something for themselves. And that's kind of how I approach every song. Like, I write these songs, and the narratives are more often than not personal. I think trying to write from those areas of my life really seem to resonate more anyway, and I get more excited about them. But ultimately, once I put them out, they're all open to interpretation. But yeah, the shared experience of this year, makes that connection hopefully a little more obvious.
Are you just itching to get back out on the road?
Yeah, I say that most of the time. Yeah, I mean, I like what I do for a living. I like being able to perform. I love the immediacy of a live show. So I do miss that, but there's an opportunity cost to everything. I'll miss not being home more. But you know, that's the gig.
I was going to say, your wife must be thrilled you're home, right?
Most of the time.
Most of the time.
She's like, well, you can go. Yeah, I think she's enjoyed me being around.
So you haven't found it like harder to be inspired during COVID, or is it just the opposite?
No, it's about the same. I think it's just tuning into different things. You know, there is a whole world going on out there, whether or not we're a part of it. So the news has been helpful. I think just tuning into the emotions surrounded, particularly around the holidays now. Of, you know, doing Thanksgiving over Zoom as opposed to at the table.
It was a weird one.
It was, yeah. I think. You know, but on the flip side of it, you know, I'm thankful that this technology exists where we can do this at all.
Seriously.
It's so strange to think, like, there was a time when, like, FaceTime wasn't around. We just talked on the phone.
I've thought of that. Of, like, if this were happening in a different time without all of this.
What do you do? Yeah.
You know, like, of course, like, you look at, like, television, all that. Like, Hollywood doesn't miss a beat. Like, they have a week where they don't know how to do it, and then it just somehow they figure it all out. And
yeah. Well, you had all these shows coming back and doing like the special one-offs for charity where they were just doing Zoom. I watched the Parks and Rec one a few times.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, it's as with everything, it's adapt or die. So let's adapt.
Well, Parks and Rec is one of the best shows ever.
Come on. Yes. I knew we were going to get along, David. I'm glad we figured this out.
I mean, you just go down and you're like, there's not one weak link in this entire cast. And the more you add people, you add Rob Lowe later, like, it's just brilliant. Every single thing.
Parks and Rec, The Office. Those two shows in particular have been a nice little lifeline this year, haven't they?
Who was your favorite on Parks and Rec?
It depends. I think most of the time I really liked April Ludgate. Most of the time. I like the really dry, dark humor a lot.
Yeah.
But then sometimes it was Ben. I liked Ben Wyatt a lot.
Interesting. Yeah. For me, it was April or Donna. Retta.
That's pretty rad. I'll give you Donna. I mean, really, just, yeah, who am I? I did like I like Sean Ralphio and Mona Lisa as well. It's good.
Also great additions to the cast.
Yep.
Is there like, do you, I mean, I'm bad with this, but is there any like new current music, like, you know, of the kids today? Like, is there, I mean, again, you're not old. I'm just saying.
I was going to say, you're the wrong guy. I turned 38 this month. So,
well, that's why I'm not really good with such new music either, even though I'm somewhat aware of it. But like, you know, is there anyone where you're like, oh, Shawn Mendes is the best, or, you know.
I tend to skew more, more alternative indie stuff right now. There's one rock song right now that's really been grabbing me. Mammoth WVH. It's Eddie Van Halen's son.
Oh.
Called Mammoth WVH. And he just put out this song called Distance about his dad. And the video is just a gut wrencher. I can't listen to that song without getting like choked up. I love that song right now. I've gotten really into like Meg Myers the last like year and a half or two. I think her catalog's great. And I'm drawing a blank on a bunch of others. But yeah, that's a good
start. Those are good ones. No, when I was at the gym like 2 or 3 weeks ago, I saw Wolf Van Halen. The sound wasn't on, and I didn't know what it was, and it must have been. I mean, I thought it was just a tribute to Eddie, but it must have been about that song because he's on it.
I think you know, ever so often you come across a song that like it'll grab you, and it's a good song, but then when you put the visual with it, it just amplifies it to the nth degree.
Yeah.
And that song, there's a song called Hellbent by an artist named Kenna. Song's great, but the video just, I mean, lifts it to another level. Songs like that are pretty rare, but when you can access the visual of it and it really drives it home, those are special.
Yeah. Totally. So what's, as we wrap up, what's next for you? What are your plans for the rest of COVID? What's going on?
Well, my main plan for the rest of COVID is to hopefully not get COVID. Past that, you know, we're working on the rest of a new EP. We've released Red Stern Blue and now Strange World. Those will be on the EP. We're going to get that out first part of next year.
That's good.
And then as soon as we're able, we've got dates in Europe in March and then in the Northeast in April. Hopefully those stick. If not, we'll reschedule and push them back and get on the road as soon as we can.
Yeah, I go to a lot of live shows. So, yes, like all my live shows from March were then like whatever, then September. But everything that I have now that's already purchased, which I don't even know what it is, it all seems to be March and April. So,
yeah. Well, if you're not in LA, is that right?
I'm in New York City, but I travel.
Okay. We will, if everything holds up, we'll be there in April if you want to come out.
I will absolutely come out.
Yeah, please do.
Knock on wood.
In fact, let whoever set this up know, and we'll get you on a list for sure.
I will. I'll talk to them, and that would be amazing. I really appreciate it. Tell everyone where they can find you online.
DavidCookOfficial.com is the website. You go to @TheDavidCook on Twitter. I'm drawing a blank now on Facebook and Instagram. I think Instagram is David Cook Official. Yeah, we'll go with that.
I think
check out David Cook Official on Instagram.
And they can get the new music as well.
Anywhere you listen to, buy, stream music, yeah, it's there. So, just like put it on loop and play it in the background. Let's get a few streams going. Let's do that.
It's a great song. Listen, it's a great song. It's of the times. So I appreciate you doing this.
Absolutely. Thank you.
We'll keep in touch. I'll come out when you're in New York.
Sounds good, man. So, happy holidays.
Thank you so much. Take care. Bye.
Thanks for listening to yet another episode of Behind the Velvet Rope. Because without you listeners, I would just be a crazy person with voices in my head. And if you like what you hear, subscribe on Apple Podcasts under Behind the Velvet Rope. And when you're done subscribing, feel free to leave a 5-star write-up review. because the write-up reviews actually count. We read each and every one of them. We post the best ones, and the reviews really help our shows keep going. And we really appreciate everything you guys say, especially the positive ones. And if you want to find us online, we're at Behind Velvet Rope on Instagram. We are at David Yontef on Instagram. We're Behind The Velvet Rope on Apple Podcasts. Or head on over to Patreon, because you know what? There are just some things we can't talk about here. So for our bonus episodes, go to Patreon and type in Behind The Velvet Rope. And if you still aren't sick of me and you want more David, go to Cameo and book me on Cameo. And you can ask me anything there. I'll answer whatever you want. And I have a bargain basement price of $10. Thank you guys. See you soon.